Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
After almost a decade of development, System Shock is back. The PC cult classic that would go on to spawn some of the biggest names in the games industry, such as Bioshock, Deus Ex, and Dishonored, has been lovingly restored by Night Dive Studios. This week, ahead of release, we sat down with Stephen Kick and Larry Kupperman from Night Dive to discuss the much-anticipated game, the trials and tribulations of crowdfunding, and what System Shock means to the history of PC gaming. Stick around after our discussion for a chance to win one of five copies of System Shock.
Make yourself comfortable, hacker. Stay a while.
There's a lot of discussion about how it's so faithful, but almost to a fault. And that's totally by design. When we started development, I don't think we really had the full grasp of its importance and the legacy that it's left behind. I mean, you look at games like even Thief, which came out a couple of years after or in between the two games, Deus Ex, of course, Dishonored from Harvey Smith's Arcane, a number of the other immersive sims, Prey from Bethesda, which is probably the most recent example. And you can trace back a lot of what those games did to the original System Shock. And I don't think the weight of that really became apparent until we decided to essentially restart development halfway through, taking into account just how important it really is and has become to the industry at large.
I think of all the people whose lives have been impacted by the game. All of the people that came out of the early Looking Glass days, who went on to build things, not just concepts that were evolved, but how people's careers changed with because of the System Shock franchise. And that by that I include both System Shock 1 and System Shock 2. We've always said that our remake is sort of System Shock 1.5, that we've borrowed things from the second game as well as the first. But you know, you think of all the people's careers who've been launched because of this, and how the lessons of something that they did in 1994 continued forward to impacting current games currently in development in 2023. I think that's the real achievement.
And Stephen, you mentioned about restarting the game. I'm sure there was an inherent pressure when you took on this project because it is such an iconic PC game, but was it more than you expected it to be?
Yeah, absolutely, without a doubt. Like I said, about halfway through development of that first version of the game we were working on, we were sharing our progress with the backers, and the feedback we were getting was unanimously, I'm not going to say negative, but it was definitely not in the direction that we wanted to go. And it was an incredibly hard choice we had to make, but we decided that we had strayed far from the vision and everything that we had promised on the Kickstarter. And so we knew that in order to, again, kind of do justice to the legacy of the game and everything that it had accomplished afterward, we would need to kind of start over. And it was one of those things where I wish I had chosen some better verbiage. When I said that we were going on hiatus, a lot of people just assumed that the game was dead. And we got a lot of flack for that. So today is especially important just for everybody involved in that decision, because we pulled through. We delivered the game that we promised that we were going to do. It took a lot longer than we were hoping, but ultimately, it looks like it was worth the wait.
And Larry, can you speak to some of the kind of the, in your role, some of the pressures around that decision moment to kind of redirect the ship?
I will speak about it only in very general terms. because the things still haven't congealed, but our expenses in terms of time, in terms of effort, there is no one on the System Shock team that did not work to 100% of capacity. It was not something that our management team enforced on them. It was something that for every member of the team, this was truly a passion project. And I can't thank them enough. We wouldn't be here without their amazing efforts. That said, our fans should know that it was a commitment beyond what we had originally anticipated, way beyond what we had originally anticipated, both in terms of time, in terms of direction of the studio, and of course, in terms of money.
And Stephen, in your role, when you're remaking something like this, how do you know what to change and what to keep? And does that require a perspective from someone that is perhaps not as dedicated to the original as the team maybe?
Yeah, we were fortunate enough to have a lot of, in this instance, I mean, we had a lot of cooks in the kitchen. After we decided to restart the project, we opted to go for more of a democratic solution to some of those questions, because we have a lot of people on our team that just love that game more than anything else. And so we kind of let them take lead on what's going to go in, what's going to stay, what kind of things we're going to change, and what things we're going to remove completely. And, one of the strong voices that we had on the project was from one of the original developers. And, Rob Waters, it's been said time and time again, I mean, he's been kind of the backbone of keeping it purely System Shock. And a lot of what he said would go, which is odd thinking about it now, because he was more or less an art director and not a designer. But we would often go to him and say, well, what were you thinking here? Do you remember the thought process behind this? Is this something that we could change to be more like BioShock or even System Shock 2 without, kind of messing with the secret sauce?
And I'll also jump in when we talk about the OGs such as Rob. Jordan, it's really important that our fans know that we've had really very positive support from Paul Neurath and Warren Spector. We were very aware of the burden, the historical burden that was on that we were caretakers of the pedigree of System Shock, and it would be remiss if we didn't mention those people. The other thing, last August when we showed the game to thousands of people back to back at Gamescom and at PAX, we took all of that feedback into account as well.
Mm. So you feel the DNA from the original is still very firmly influencing this one?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean, without a doubt, it's hard to step back and look at it, being so close to it this whole time. But I think anybody that has any knowledge of the original or has even played it for a short amount of time is going to look at this and they're going to go, oh, of course, this is a System Shock game. Of course, this is what Looking Glass would have done had they had access to the technology back then, for better or for worse. Honestly, when I start seeing that pop up in reviews, I couldn't be more proud.
So this is a bit of a heavier question, in the sense of, outside of simply updating the way it looks and make it more playable, Stephen, what is the purpose of remaking System Shock to you?
Well, when we started working on the Enhanced Edition, we had been working with a modder that we found off the systemshock.org community, and they had implemented a simple mouse look mod to the original that just I mean, it doesn't get any more simple than that. It allowed you to look around the environment using the mouse. I mean, it sounds crazy, you know, saying it out loud. But in 1994, there weren't really any conventions as to how to control your character in a video game. And System Shock did not have a mouse look feature. And so when we were playing the game again with this mod, I don't know why it took so long for somebody to finally put something like that in there. We discovered that the game really opened up and it felt more like a game and less like, you know, an Excel spreadsheet with pretty visuals. I mean, I feel bad.
Oh, come on. The visuals weren't that pretty.
Yeah. It just, it felt like a game that was lost to time that a lot of people had never experienced before. And so when we released that, we found multiple generations of gamers who had not played it, suddenly discovering it and really loving it. And that was kind of the impetus behind the decision. We're like, wow, this game is amazing again. And no one's really created anything quite like this since. I mean, you can see the DNA and you can see the legacy again and the influences of it, but nobody's made a System Shock like this. And we just decided then and there that it would be the perfect opportunity to do a remake.
And do you guys feel like almost caretakers of the franchise at this point?
Yes.
Yeah.
Very, very much so. We feel that way. We feel that way about, I mean, you know this, Jordan. I don't need to say it. That's Night Dive's entire mission, to bring back the lost gems and not just the games, but to bring back what they meant. And this is probably our single greatest success story in that. I'm okay with people finding it too challenging. I'm okay with you know, we didn't set out to make a hack and slash, and we didn't set out to make a platformer. We set out with a very deliberate mission, which was to bring back a lost gem, and we've done that.
Mm. And could you speak, Larry, for people perhaps who aren't aware of Night Dive's previous work, what about this project spoke to Night Dive and what made Night Dive uniquely positioned to be the ones to take it over the line?
Well, to begin with, Night Dive was founded because Steven was able to arrange something that nobody had done before, which was to get a publishing deal for System Shock 2. A game that had truly been lost. And after I joined the company, which was about a year after the company started, my number one mission was to acquire the full rights to the System Shock franchise. And that began very much of a process. There were a lot of phone calls, a lot of back and forth on there. But that really was my primary mission on that, and it was complicated. I mean, there's no question about that. You know, you had to peel back 20 years of history at that time, more than a decade of history. But we were successful and able to bring the game to the point where it's returned to people, where the games are again accessible, and with this remake. We really believe that we've opened it up to a completely new audience. We know that the old school, that anyone that loves classic games is going to be thrilled by this. I mean, we know those OGs, they're our basic fans. I mean, more than 20,000 people backed the game, and they're the reason we are where we are today. That said, I think that many people are going to try the game for the first time, and a significant number of them are going to understand where all the fruits of the System Shock tree came from, how we get to a BioShock Infinite, a Prey, Deus Ex, Thief, all of those classic games, how they came out of the single starting point.
Hmm. And do you feel like it's almost like remastering a kind of classic film that influenced an entire generation of filmmakers at that point?
I couldn't come up with a better model of how it feels.
Hmm. And you guys get to be the ones responsible for that. And seemingly from the reviews, I've read a few of them myself, it seems that people are really focused on how authentic it is to that original experience, as you've mentioned, for better or for worse. Stephen, upon reading those reviews today, what was your initial reaction and what were you expecting when you were sitting there last night waiting for this to happen?
I think I gave a couple of fist pumps.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is like kind of what we were aiming for. We weren't going to try to do a Resident Evil 4 remake. We weren't doing a Final Fantasy 7 or even a Dead Space. It was we wanted to make System Shock again, and we just wanted to make it accessible and enjoyable for not only the OGs but as many people who are willing to kind of just take on that mission. It's a commitment to play System Shock. And I think that that's why there's so many diehard fans from the original, is because those people really took that commitment seriously and they plowed through that game. And there is a learning curve introduced to it. But for those that stick through it, you're rewarded with what many consider to be one of the finest examples of PC gaming. And I think and I hope, based on reading the reviews, that people are going to feel that way again with the remake.
I'm going to say that the timing of it also couldn't be better. We've released it at a moment when just in general across the gaming platforms, people have come to accept that hard games can be good.
Yeah. So in terms of like the response is coming from the hardest of the hardcore kind of gaming press. What's been the response from backers as of recent? You spoke about how there was a bit of some backlash to how the game was going, but now that you're almost over the line, do you think that those people who initially backed you feel confident?
Yeah, I was actually just reading some of those comments. There's a lot of them. If you look at any of the reviews, whether it's a written review like on Polygon or a YouTube review like ACG or G-Man Lives or anything like that, there's sprinkled throughout the comments, there's backers. And what I really love seeing is that, oh, I never had any doubt. I'm glad that they took their time. I couldn't be more happier as a backer. If they came to Kickstarter again, I wouldn't hesitate, but I would know that, you know, it could take just as long. And the tone has definitely shifted.
It's
now that the game is out and it's we've delivered what we kind of said we would. And I'm okay with that.
It's getting the first report card from your first child. Oh, good. We knew he had potential, but glad to see that other people see it as well.
It's important to say that, and I know Larry touched on this earlier, but truly, the Kickstarter backers are why we're here at all. And it was our commitment to them and the trust that they put in Night Dive that really saw us through to the end here. I think that if this had just been an internally funded project from the start and we were running into some of these issues, it might have been an easier choice to just maybe choose another developer to take on the work or just to cancel it outright. But it was because we had that backing from those people, and they had put their trust in us. I mean, it's a special thing to trust people with your money, especially this day and age. And Night Dive was not going to be that company that was going to, you know, we weren't going to fail.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank.
LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad was thinking like, have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. And then we're way around a duck.
So if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Excellent. So outside of the backers, the people who know System Shock, what do you think the reaction will be, Larry, from someone who just sees this on Steam? Hopefully you guys get a nice placement on Steam. Someone just picks it up and thinks, oh, I've roughly heard of that name. What do you expect the reaction to be from that new player base?
So couple of things on there. I think that we talk about gamers as though there was a single, you know, single hive mind of that. And there's not. There's a tremendous amount of diversity there. I think that there will be a small percentage, hopefully a small percentage, that will pick up System Shock and will say, well, I need more hand holding than this game is providing. And it won't be for them. And that's okay. I don't want anyone to feel bad if they can't make it through. And you'll know that by the time you come to medical, by the time you get through the medical level, I should say. That said, I think, there's going to be a larger group of enthusiast gamers who are going to delight in the difficulty of it, who are going to go around and mess with the difficulty settings so that they can take, you know, the first one, maybe it'll be puzzle heavy in the second, et cetera, and so forth. And we've created a system for that. I think in the middle ground, there are going to be a lot of people who will put in the amount of effort and will see the reward for the first time and say, you know, it's hard, but everything worth doing is hard.
And I'm sure you expected me to ask about this. Talk to me about those console versions. What's the pain point? When are we likely to see them? How much can you say?
So our goal is to have them out and polished to hit the shelves in both physical and digital versions by the end of the year. That's pretty aggressive, and I do want to remind our fans that approvals, you know, what are referred to as first party cert approvals are up to, you know, Sony and Microsoft in these cases. So I can't guarantee that, but that's our goal. We expect to have a patch coming out shortly after the PC release. We're going to take what feedback that we get from our presumably large audience. We'll synthesize that. We'll go through and fix what we need to. And then from that point on, we are heads down on the console builds.
Excellent. You don't get any time to relax and enjoy it, no?
Actually, we have already been, we have several layers of QA, which I think shows in the game. We have an internal, layer. We have, our publisher, Prime Matter Division of PlayOn, and, we use Quantic Labs as an external. We've already been sending, builds over. I would say realistically, they are perhaps, 80% complete, but this is a labor of love for us, and we want everybody's console experience to be as close to perfect as we can make it.
Stephen, just talking about that, in terms of the time that's passed, when I was researching that the game was announced for the PC and the Xbox One, and now we're here. How does that feel? How have you changed as a person in that time? It must be pretty staggering.
Well, I have a 4-year-old now. he was born mid development. So I've become a father. That's a totally surreal experience. So much has changed. I mean, we sold the company just recently to Atari. We've become a more or less a household name in gaming with the advent of our Quake remaster, Doom 64, the trust and respect that we've been given from companies like Bethesda and Microsoft to handle some of their tier one properties. And it's just a good feeling, because this is what we originally set out to do all those years ago, was to just make sure that the games that we grew up enjoying to play were accessible and there for everybody to enjoy from here on out. These are the games that originally inspired me to become a game developer, and I'm hoping that we do the same for the next generation of game developers, that they have access to these games and that they can learn from the past. And, make some informed decisions of their own when they're designing their own games.
It was one of the things that led us to the release of the source code for System Shock also, that, we support the modding community, because something 60% of the developers that work at Night Dive came from the modding community. we're very, very aware of that relationship. Our hope is that we've created something that we've created a model in Night Dive Studios, a business model that will go on into the future. Jordan, if you'd asked me how I've changed, I would have said I had a full head of hair when we started the project.
Was it worth it to get rid of it to get System Shock out of the door?
Absolutely. Yeah. If I had it all to do over again, I wouldn't have used the word hiatus, but other than that, we would have been good.
And Stephen, just to close us out, speak to those backers who were there from day one. As soon as it was announced, they were committed, and now they're finally getting this product in 2023, and it's hopefully everything they'd wanted it to be back then.
Yeah, it's just a big thank you. Thank you for your patience and your understanding, and realizing that behind it all, we're just a bunch of human beings trying to figure this out, and doing the best we can to deliver on promises that we made. And never once did we take that responsibility lightly. Never once did a decision to delay the game, impact us in some huge way, whether that be financially or mentally. There were a lot of sleepless nights during the development of this game. And I think for the first time in the last 7 years, I actually slept well last night. So thank you for sticking with us. And I just hope that you enjoy the game.
Thanks again to Larry and Stephen for sitting down with me and chatting all things System Shock. And thank you for listening to this bonus edition of VGC, a video game podcast. Now, your opportunity to win one of 5 copies of System Shock, simply email podcast@videogameschronicle.com with the subject line System Shock and tell us your favourite immersive sim. we'll give my favourite answers the five keys. Not all five of them, each of the keys will be going to separate people, you understand. Be sure to check back next week for another episode of VGC, a video game podcast. I've been Jordan Midler. Thank you, and see you later.
VGC, a video games podcast, is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously,
man. Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like, have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.